The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. And that's because the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe has some great features like the available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads, and much, much more. So think about those places that you want to go, the things that you'd like to do this weekend, and where the Santa Fe can take you. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Welcome back to the First Cut Podcast. This is Kyle Porter. We are Chip Patterson-less today, but we do have Sean Martin on board for the entirety of the show. Sean, how are we doing?
Good. No spoilers, but I believe we're discussing another Chip later in the show.
We are. It's an ode to our Chip. To my Chip.
Little less energy to the intro with no Chip, but it'll be good. Less traffic.
I know. I can't. He just brings it. He's like, who was the starter at the Open?
Ivor Robson.
Yeah, he's like Ivan Robson, and I'm like, I don't know, Bob. What's his name? Ford. Bob Ford.
No, he's more like Vince McMahon.
Okay, we have a lot to talk about. First thing we're going to discuss is Travelers Championship. Where were you when Shea Reve burned down the back nine at TPC River Highland with a 28 on Saturday?
Where was I? I don't remember. I just remember checking the scores after and texting some people, welcome to the Reve era. I mean, the guy just finished third in the U.S. Open and was waxing the field. A strong field even at the Travelers this week.
It's a great field.
Yeah.
I got multiple texts from you this morning before taping this. Chez is elite. Chez is the do your Chez thing. Let's go.
So I do think I was doing a little calculations last night, cuz I mean, I feel like he always plays well. He plays very well at Pebble, plays well on the West Coast. Has had a good finish at Mayakoba, and I was like, man, I feel like if you put Chez on a shorter golf course, because there's guys like this, right? I always think, like, what would the top 50 in the world ranking look like if we only played courses that were like 7,000 yards long, where distance wasn't a factor, it was everything else. And so I did the numbers, did some spreadsheeting a little bit, and I found that if you took, since the last 3 years, if you took strokes gained per round, so basically how much they're beating the field average by each week, each day, since the start of the 2017 season, Chez is elite. So minimum 15 rounds in that time. The list goes Rory McIlroy, Gary sure. Woodland. Gary played very well at Pebble, which falls in that category. Gary also always plays well at the Hawaii event, Sony Open, and then at Malaysia at CIMB, which is one of the shortest courses on tour.
Webb's got to be up there, doesn't he?
Well, third is Chez Reavie, and fourth is Webb Simpson.
There you go.
Now, there's a lot of factors that go in. This is a small-ish sample size, but I mean, Chez is the only third guy this season to win who's ranked outside the top 150 in driving distance. So, I mean, driving distance is definitely a factor. It's definitely something that hinders him. But all other aspects of his game right now are probably – they're elite.
Yeah, and he was first in strokes gained on approach shots. He was seventh in that category at the U.S. Open. And I think that sort of goes to your point of, like, he's gaining so many strokes from tee to green, but they're all coming with his iron play. I mean, he's not losing strokes with the driver, which is usually the case. I don't know. There's so many different ways to go with this. The thing that I was sort of thinking about, he feels a little Charles Howell light-ish, just in terms of, like, the way his career has developed. He wins in 08. He goes over a decade without winning again. Do you like the Charles Howell light-ish comparison?
The name Corey Pavin came up a lot, and obviously Pavin was a different caliber player, also in a different era. But he is kind of Pavin, of just one of those guys who's very short but straight. I like the Pavin comparison. Howell for me is a little tough, just because Howell's always going to be thought of for that impressive amateur career. And Chez did win, he did win a USGA title. He won the US Amateur Pub Links, which no longer exists. But I like more like a Corey Pavin style. Just, it's a swing that, you know, there's guys Chez's size who hit it farther, but he has mastered a swing that just, you know, you can only hit it so far with that action. And unfortunately today, the reality is that hinders you.
Well, and it's so interesting. I was reading about him just over the last day or so, and he had wrist surgery in what, 13, 14, something like that?
Yeah, he played the Web.com Tour Finals and regained his card not all that long ago.
Yeah, I know. But like the weird part for me was he was like having success on the PGA Tour and are we still calling it the Web.com?
Corn Ferry.
There we go. He was having success on both of those tours while sort of reshaping his swing to fit this like rebuilt wrist. That's such a hard thing to do, right? I mean, how many guys are capable of like keeping your card on these tours while still, while rebuilding a swing to kind of go along with it?
Yeah. You know what's crazy too, looking at his record, he's very feast or famine. I'm looking, he has 5 top 3 finishes the last 2 seasons, and that's out of 8 total top 10s.
Yeah.
So when he does it, he gets into contention. But yeah, I think this one didn't seem to resonate as much as some other Cinderella stories, but it is crazy. And maybe because we were talking about it, Pebble, he doesn't look 37. I think he's 37, but no. I mean, it's been 11 years since he won. It's been more than a decade. Like, obviously winning doesn't happen often, but you know, some guys, they just don't win at all. To win 11 years between victories has to be so maddening. And then you have to think about how satisfying it has to be when it finally happens.
Yeah, no, totally. And great stat on that from Justin Ray. He said, in the span between Chez's wins, 190 different players have won on the PGA Tour. That's crazy.
What about that leaderboard from his victory?
Yeah.
Will Gray tweeted that one out. That was a throwback Sunday.
Yeah, pull that up because I got another one here. Dustin Johnson earned, this is from Justin Ray. Dustin Johnson earned all 20 of his PGA Tour titles between Chez's 2 victories. That's crazy, right?
Yeah.
That's insane. I mean, that's insane.
Dustin Johnson had a Hall of Fame career between Chez's victories. But Brooks Koepka did too. All right, so Canadian Open 2008 at Glen Abbey.
Yeah, this leaderboard is so sick.
Which, by the way, we speak of him mastering the short courses. Glen Abbey is a long hitter's paradise. It has a bunch of par fives that are reachable for the big guys. Like Johnny Vegas won twice there, DJ won there. But Chez Reavy first, Billy Mayfair second. He's on PGA Tour champions right now. Steve Marino third. With Sean O'Hare, I see, you know, O'Hare still has tour status. Marino, I see bounce back and forth between there and the Corn Ferry. Scott McCarron tied for fifth. He's on PGA Tour champions. I think just ripping it up there. Also tied fifth, Nicholas Thompson, who I believe is out of golf, maybe back on the web. Mike Weir, T5, Canada's favorite son with a little bit of a resurgence. And then Glenn Day, T8. I have no idea where Glenn Day is right now. This one will get the viewers going, T.A. Anthony Kim. And then finally, Kevin Na. Anthony Kim, though, final round 75 to finish 6 back. It looks like he held the 54-hole lead. Yeah, amazing. Wow, Chez Reavy, Anthony Kim. Chez had a one-shot lead over Anthony Kim and apparently just stared AK down and left him quaking in his boots. And this was 2008. This was the year that Anthony Kim was on the Ryder Cup team, and he's running around Valhalla with an American flag. This was like peak Anthony Kim, and Chez Reavy just stared him down.
Anthony Kim and Boo Weekly just lighting up Valhalla that year.
Yeah.
This is awesome. Yeah, I mean, I think there's something, and we talk about this a lot, like there's something to be said for just the longevity of playing 278 PGA Tour events, of keeping your card, of going to Q School. I mean, I read today, he's one of the last guys to go to Q School and earn his card back. And to do that year over year and earn, I think he's made, what, 14 mil in his career, 13 mil, something like that. It's not an impressive career in the way that we look at stars and guys that we talk about a lot, but it is an impressive career in terms of longevity and just being kind of in the mix year in and year out.
Yeah, and but also not even being in the mix really, but just kind of that, like we talked about earlier, coming back from, I mean, he was 160th in the FedEx Cup not that long ago. Like, he was not that far from probably, you know, things were looking kind of bleak, and he's definitely reinvented himself, and he's had some of the best years of his career. So I'm looking, he finished 10th in the FedEx Cup in 2011. That was when he lost to Webb at the Deutsche Bank. But then he goes 132, 118, 239, 166th in 2015, then climbs back to 81st, 39th, 34th, and 12th. So you're also looking at his possibly his second tour championship appearance. And I mean, basically was in the wilderness, was in the woods, was missing more cuts than he was making, and then has really turned it around, especially, I mean, to turn it around with, like we've talked about it, not to harp on it too much, but turning it around in an era when distance really, really matters, and he lacks it and has been able to find a way to get it done.
Yeah. Okay. You want to go Zach Sucher or your boy, our other Chip, our beloved Chip McDaniel?
Let's do Chip McDaniel, because I saw a tweet just come across that he did receive a sponsor exemption into the Rocket Mortgage. So
nice.
There's now four spots available in the Monday qualifier, not three, assuming he would have taken one. But I'm glad, and a lot of credit to one of my favorite new Twitter accounts, not that new maybe, but up and coming, at A Case of the Golf One, which is kind of a double level meaning, because he covers Monday qualifiers. So if you then put it together, it's A Case of the Mondays. Took me a while to figure out what that meant, and then I finally – the light bulb came on. But he does a great job of covering kind of the lower levels of golf, just guys grinding to make it, whether through Monday qualifiers or mini tours, or just the guys that are outside the spotlight but are just doing amazing things to try to keep their career alive. And so he's been all over the Chip McDaniel story, and he kind of started a let's say groundswell movement to get Chip a sponsor exemption, and it looks like it's paid off, which is awesome. Because I mean, he had to go, he flew a red eye Sunday night from Pebble to Boston, drove 90 minutes, arrived at the golf course an hour before his tee time, goes out, shoots 67, then wins a playoff and gets into Travelers. And like, I mean, I took a red eye home from Pebble as well, and I slept all day and was useless and didn't do anything. And this guy went out and shot 67. And then, you know, he played solid. He faded on Sunday, but he played with Brooks Koepka on Saturday. And I mean, Brooks admitted being disinterested and fatigued and worn out, but he still beat Brooks 68-72 in their Saturday pairing. And, you know, even if Brooks didn't play well, still, I mean, Chip played alongside Brooks and wasn't overtaken by the moment and played well, playing with kind of maybe the most intimidating figure in golf right now. And so all credit to Chip for that.
I'm unconvinced that you're not running that Twitter account. That is like, that's so like the that's the crossroads of all of your favorite things.
So he and I have started texting. He was on the Fried Egg podcast, and it's a great pod. People should listen to it. But since then, I've been texting with him. I told him, I go, man, like, I used to be all over the Monday qualifier scene and trying to cover that and trying to be on top of that. And finally, I was like, this guy's got the market cornered. Like, he's crazy. I can't compete with it. And so I have ceded that market a little bit to him. I still kind of hang out in the amateur golf circles and collegiate circles. But as far as Monday qualifiers and mini tours, man, like, that guy, I mean, he can't be beat. He's crazy.
It's a fascinating circle, right? It's like, you see some of these names come across in Monday qualifiers and you're like, whoa, like, what has that guy been doing? It's super interesting. Another guy that, well, on the McDaniel thing, what's his deal in terms of like status, and what's he what's his essentially goal for the rest of the summer?
So he missed at Q school. So he started this year with no status, and he was thinking about going to Canada to try that tour, but he Mondayed for the Dominican Republic event, the Corrales Punta Cana, the one that Graham McDowell won. And he made the cut and shoots a Sunday 63 to finish T5. And that's kind of where people started to kind of pay attention. Cause like, who's this guy that just shot a 63, sorry, on Sunday to vault up the leaderboard. And it's kind of a cool story. He was a all-state basketball player in Kentucky, which it's a pretty good place to do it. And then he was, He beat Sam Burns in the junior PGA and then went to the University of Kentucky and had a like good career, but not great. I don't think he was ever an All-American. And he just turned pro last year, 2018. So he plays well at Punta Cana and he's like, well, my best thing to do now is not go to Canada, but instead, if you can make the top 200 in the FedEx Cup with your non-member points you earn, you get into the Korn Ferry Finals, which is the three tournaments where you can earn PGA Tour cards for next season. So, and it's a fairly low threshold to clear because you're a lot of guys down around the 200 on that list are guys who aren't playing all that much. They're past champions, maybe, you know, older guys. So anyways, he's got 78 points right now. And I'm going to look, he's probably entering the tournament. He was about, I want to say he was like 196th in the FedEx Cup. And so he's close to what he needs to be, but obviously a few more points would help just to kind of secure that status. Cause there's not that many weeks left, but there's still enough that people could pass him. So he is with 78 points. He's still 196. He kind of faded on Sunday. So yeah. Definitely more points would help, but he's in line for a spot in those finals. And I think as people see kind of, you know, what he's up against, that he needs starts, he needs points, hopefully more people like the Rocket Mortgage people will reach out and give him starts.
Yeah, it's a cool story. And another cool story, speaking of the Travelers, was Zach Sucher shooting a 30 on the back nine on Sunday. By the way, Chip Patterson and I, we hop on here, we type Brooks, DJ, Rory. I get you on here, and we're going 15 minutes on Chez, Chip McDaniel, and Zach Sucher. So congratulations for hijacking this to the guys you want to talk about.
Anyone can pontificate on the big names. There's plenty of people that can do that. I'd much rather would just kind of dig through the cracks and crevices of professional golf.
So Zach Sucher goes T2 at Travelers, chips in on 18 for par. Just a really cool moment, honestly. And the reason it's a cool moment is because he made like 650 grand by finishing T2. And not only that, but he goes from 505th in the world to 147th with that finish, which is just an unbelievable jump. And
well, and also not being a homer for my employer, but also 126th in the FedEx Cup, which comes with it a playoff start, but also a start in the Players Championship. I mean, for a guy who, and we can get into it, but like he was talking about, he took out new credit cards to max those out, and I mean, all that stuff is a big boondoggle for a guy who admitted that he's got a fair amount of debt.
Yeah, it's so weird because you've got the 147th best player in the world, and I know that's brand new, like it just happened. And the chasm between his life and the way he makes money or whatever, and like the top 10 guys in the world. I mean, do you think Ricky Fowler's worried about credit card debt?
No.
Like, but isn't that such a, like, in what other profession is like the hundred, it's probably unfair to call him the 147th best player, but even like the top, let's say he's like the 300th best player. In what other profession is the chasm between 300 and top 25 like that big? I don't know. Maybe that is true of other professions.
Yeah, I mean, but you look at like baseball. Now, granted, it's hard enough to get to the majors, but once you do, you're subject to a minimum salary. I mean, there's no minimum salary. It was 2 years ago with the Travelers that he shut it down because of injuries and didn't play on the PGA Tour again until this season. And even then, he had played 14 events. He'd made $35,000. He made 3 of 14 cuts. So, I mean, he's got $810,000 in career tour earnings, and that's because 660 of them came last week. And even the week was crazy. Like, we talk about the Chez Reavy show, but halfway through the third round, it was like the Zach Sucher show. He was like five ahead. He was rolling. And then he plays the first three holes, the back nine, five over, and Chez shoots 28, and the whole script flips. So a lot of credit to him for, after going, you know, bogey, double, double, and losing this lead he'd built, for keeping it together, not only, you know, finishing strong on Saturday, but then also, you know, this is a guy where if he shoots a 72 on Sunday and finishes 12th, like, it doesn't really get him very much. So for him to chip in on 18 and close strong and hold it together on Sunday, I mean, yeah, he didn't win, but, I mean, still a career-changing week for him.
Yeah, no, it is. And, you know, not to, again, pay homage to your employer, but He's on a medical extension. So this was his fourth of, I guess, six medical starts. And I don't, can, you might be able to explain this better than I can, but he needs to get to 347 FedEx Cup points to get his card. I don't know why that's the number. I don't know what, is that 125th? Well,
yeah, that's the 125 from the last season, okay. The season that he was injured, that 2017 season. But that will only get him status through the end of this season, right. Which it's kind of crazy. It's only June, but there's not much time left. We've got, you know, Detroit, Minnesota, John Deere, and then the Open Championship, and then the WGC, the St. Jude, and then the Wyndham. Basically, we have like 5-6 weeks left until the playoffs. And so really, fulfilling the medical will be nice, but only gets him, you know, 5 weeks of status, whereas the 125 now, where he's 126, that's what he needs to do for status for all of next season. So the medical, it's nice, but now he's kind of in a position where, I mean, he can keep his card for next year.
But he need, but he needs, so he said he's starting, I think he's starting either Rocket Mortgage or 3M, and then he's doing John Deere. And so he needs, what does he need to keep his card for next, or to get his card for next year?
Just top 125 in the FedEx Cup, and he's 126.
Oh, he's 126. Oh, I see what you're saying.
Okay. He's 126 in this season. Yeah, the medical extension only lasts through the, it only gets him status through the end of the, for the end of this season.
Yeah.
Finishing top 125 gets him status next season.
That makes, okay. So we're talking about, yeah, that makes sense. We're talking about two different things there. But I mean, for him, like, even if he doesn't get there, let's say he misses a cut at John Deere or whatever, and he finishes 148th in the FedEx Cup, and he goes to the Corn Ferry Final. What are we calling the KFC Bowl?
The Corn Ferry Finals, I believe, is the name. Just everything that said web.com, just replace it with Corn Ferry.
So he goes Corn Ferry Final. I mean, that's a big deal for him, right?
Yeah. I mean, look, the big deal has already happened. I mean, the 600, let's be honest. We talk about statuses, we talk about all this, but I mean, these are real people with real bills and mortgages and whatnot. I mean, the big deal is the $660,000 that he just earned.
By the way, I just asked you how you earn your card for next year. And that's, I am fully aware of how a tour player earns their card for next year.
This has been really numbers heavy. Can we just talk real quick about his bio?
Yeah. Well, can I explain myself? I was confused by the medical. Yeah. Go ahead.
Anyway. Sure. I get it. It happens to everyone. Yeah, so sure.
I remember my first podcast.
The personal section of his bio: All-State basketball selection. Which, that's like Chip McDaniel. It's nice. Non-related golf jobs after college include performing in a Backstreet Boys cover band. Yeah. He was a sixth grade checker champion in middle school,
sure.
Has wrestled an alligator, and skydiving is on his bucket list. I kind of feel like maybe he had to fill this out one year and he never thought anyone would read it or it would be publicly published anywhere. And now here it is.
It sounds like one of his kids filled it out.
Maybe. He's only got one and she's five, so that would have been pretty impressive.
Can we talk can we go Brooks or Spieth? We're 22 minutes in.
We probably should. I mean, Brooks, there's not much to talk about. Brooks was worn out.
Can I say something about Brooks?
Sure. Yeah. If you want to deal with the repercussions, go for it.
Yeah. No kidding. He comes in and he's like, yep, we're treating it like a major. And you're like, okay, well, what is that? And then he shoots a couple rounds over par, plays terribly on Saturday, and he gets to the end of Saturday and he's like, nope. I'm cooked. I'm fried. But then he also does this thing where he's like, you know, I didn't know I would be, whenever I committed to this tournament, I didn't know I would be mentally fried from contending in the majors. And it's like, well, wait a second. Like, you're the one that expects to, like, win every major. Like, you, more than anybody, like, kind of purport that as your attitude going into the majors, like, I'm going to be there at the end. I'm going to be there at the end. I'm going to win. I'm going to win. So why would you have thought anything other than you being, like, mentally cooked the week after a major championship?
Yeah, I think there are times, though, where it just – it kind of catches up to you. And you do – you want to try, but it just – you don't have it.
Yeah, I guess I think what's interesting is, like, we always, like, these guys always talk about, I mean, Tiger made it famous, but everybody talks about, Spieth has talked a ton about peaking four times a year. And I think for Koepka, it's more like he's sort of figured out, maybe this is true, maybe not. It seems like he's figured out how to kind of mentally peak four times a year. And I think we've always taken that phrase to mean like physically peak, like have your best stuff, have your swing, have everything in order. But I think mentally it matters just as much, if not more. And he seems to have like, however, for whatever reason, figured out that part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what, I mean, it doesn't seem like you can do that, but I guess you can. I mean, I guess he's proving it. It does seem interesting. I'm curious how long it lasts. I mean, can you really do that for 15 years? I don't know.
So his last six non-major starts: T57, T50, fourth at Byron Nelson, T56, T56, miscut at Arnold Palmer. One finish inside the top 50. His last three major starts: second, first, second. It makes no sense.
I wonder how much his scheduling has to do with this. In that, you know, we saw it with the Canadian Open and the U.S. Open. The Canadian Open was his first start after a long break, and so the U.S. Open was his second start. And so I'm wondering that if he's scheduling himself in a way, and I haven't looked close enough, and I'm not going to make the listeners wait for my browser to load. But I do think there is something to, okay, if you're going to do that, then, you know, this first event back is kind of, you're knocking the rust off basically, and you're not in competitive, you know, most guys like Spieth, I think, says he's got to play 3 weeks in a row, and really the third week is the peak. And now granted, this time for Brooks, that wasn't obviously the case, partly because he was coming off a major and a cross country flight. But I think when you're scheduling it where your regular starts, your regular events are all coming after a decent sized layoff, then yeah, you're not going to play great because it's your first event back.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. Okay, Spieth, anything? He basically said what I've been saying, which is that his top 10s were fake top 10s that were buoyed by chipping in and having, as you put on Twitter, like some of the best putting events of his entire career.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, Bethpage and Colonial both have fairly flat greens, and they're especially Colonial, it's pretty good bent grass surfaces, and he's had some great putting weeks there before, and so those are both just surfaces where when you're putting well and you're a great putter like he is, you can kind of roll it, and you can roll a lot in. So, I mean, that definitely helped him.
Yeah, no, it did. And he's just, I don't know, man. It feels like if it's, you know, if it's not his driving, it's always something. And, you know, he did make a good point in that, like, this time last year, he was really struggling with his putter, or at some point last year, I don't know about exactly this time, and that has come around, obviously. He's putting it great, and so at some point, his tee to green game, I think, will come around. He believes will come around. We'll see if it comes around, but I thought that was a good point by him, and I don't know. Maybe he'll figure it out at the sixth major here in a couple of weeks, the deer, if he plays it.
I believe he said he's not. I believe he said he usually just goes over there early.
Well, he said he hasn't decided, though.
Yeah.
So, okay. Now it's time for Stock Up, Stock Down, brought to you by TD Ameritrade. Sean, we're going to use this time to talk about your favorite thing to talk about, which is amateurs moving on into the PGA Tour. I've got I want to talk about the four guys that transitioned into their professional careers. A couple of them did it at Travelers. For a couple others, it was their second or third event as a pro. But let's lead with the headliner, the guy that you wrote about last week. Great piece, by the way. My OSU people loved it, thought it was great, excited about it. Matthew Wolf. He made the cut, but then shot at, I think it's 75 on Saturday, or 74 maybe on Saturday, and did not make the second cut. So, were you stock up, stock down? Were you disappointed? Was that about what you expected going into his first start?
I'm still going to go stock up. I mean, he hadn't competed since the NCAA championship on May 27th. So it had been a pretty long wait to compete again, just like we talked about with Brooks. And I think, too, I mean, he had a kind of ballyhooed debut. There's a lot of work to be done, a lot of, you know, media stuff, and a lot of these events, you know, pro debuts, guys just come up and miss the cut because, frankly, there's just so much attention on them. And I thought he did really well to just make the cut after two rounds. He was two over after, I think, going into the back nine of his first round, and he birdied two of his last three to shoot even in his first round. And then he had it going in the second round. He was moving up the board. He had it to five under. And unfortunately, he just played his last three holes that round. Three over, but that still was enough to make the cut. So I think still stock up, because he did making the cut in your pro debut is not something to be downplayed. And I think, you know, we learned the value of, in college golf, you can get away with double bogeys, and in pro golf, you really can't. And that was kind of the problem there. But he got it together and fought hard to make the cut, and really was almost in contention after two rounds.
Yeah, I'll go stock up too. I'm not going to let one, you know, week kind of dampen the way that I feel about his ceiling. I do think that we talked to some people, I think last week at the US Open, where there's this sort of like undercurrent of like, wait a second, do we have the right Oklahoma State guy here? And so we'll just transition into Victor Hovland, who finished T54 after finishing T12 at the US Open the week before. Stock up, stock down on Victor Hovland?
I still think stock up. Again, it was a disappointing Sunday for him, a disappointing final round, so he finished T54. But the thing that was interesting was, so he shot 67 in the first round, and he had it going well in the second round. And then this week he had a triple and a double in the second and third rounds with no penalty strokes, and he was greenside in regulation both times. So just made a mess around the green. So obviously very avoidable. I think I was a little bit surprised. You see a guy finish off his T12 at the US Open, T32 at the Masters, and then finishes 54 at the Travelers. It was definitely a little bit sloppy, but I think, again, pro debuts are weird just because there's so much attention on you. And so I think to make the cut, a little bit disappointing after the Pebble finish, but still I think good to make that cut and at least get that hurdle out of the way.
Yeah, I'm stock way up. He has, how about this? In the last 2 weeks, he's led the field in strokes gained off the tee both weeks. So U.S. Open, he was he gained 8 strokes, so basically 2 around. And then at the Travelers, he gained 6 strokes, so almost, I guess, 1.5 around. And if you combine those two events, so there wasn't a ton of guys that played in and made the cut at both, but there were several. I mean, guys like Koepka and, you know, players like that. Abraham Anser gained a combined 7. So of those players that made the cut at both events, Abraham Anser gained 7 strokes off the tee. He was second place in terms of combined strokes off the tee. Victor Hovland gained 14. He was first. So he doubled up the second best guy in strokes gained off the tee. I didn't realize he was going to be driving it at this elite a level this early on. And now,
well, did you see him bring the pump fake in the final round?
Yes. It's that's insane.
He did that in Europe last year. He was competing in a European tour event as an amateur, and I appreciate it. The Oklahoma State coach Alan Bratton was kind of talking about, that's one of the things he likes about Victor, is he's not afraid to try something new that might look foolish if it's going to lead to success. So, you know, some people would never do that because they think it would look foolish. And Malcolm Gladwell had a great podcast on this. He talked about underhand free throw shooting and how Rick Barry, you know, made all these free throws underhand, and like Shaq would do it in practice, but he's like, I'll never do this in person, even though he would make more. And same with Wilt Chamberlain. And so both of them, just because they didn't want to look foolish, didn't try something that would lead to more success. And obviously Victor is not afraid of that. So you got to give him credit for that. And that shows definitely a certain level of mental strength.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I think that he's just got such a good – I think both of those guys, but especially Hovland, he just has such a good demeanor, I think, for the professional game. Like, he's just – every time you talk to him, you see him, he seems the same all the time. Okay, let's go to your boy out of Cal, Colin Morikawa, T36 at Travelers. Stock up, stock down. And then also, like, along with that, what are the chances that he's going to be the best out of this group of four that we're talking about?
I don't know about that. I think that he's got a more consistent game. So I think the way people phrase it to me that I've talked to who follow this stuff have seen a lot more college golf than I have recently is Wolf has the biggest upside, but you know, also there may be more risk with just how far he hits it, but has the highest ceiling. Hovland is like a next generation Paul Casey, which some people might take as a knock because he only has 3 PGA Tour wins, but it's actually, I mean, it's a good career. I mean, Casey got to like third in the world. He's made a ton of Ryder Cup teams, just a consistent money maker and a consistent top player in the world. And just Hovland has that kind of same all-around game. Morikawa is a little shorter than the other two, but just apparently, you know, hits it dead straight. His misses are like in the first cut, no pun intended. But
yes,
so I think, love it. You know, and you do look at the courses they've played, it's been a little bit of a shorter stretch. So the Canadian Open was on 6,800-yard golf course. The U.S. Open at Pebble was less than 7,100. And then Travelers is like 6,800. So three of the shortest courses on tour. So, yeah, it definitely helps Colin. But the crazy thing is, so in, I guess, 12 rounds now in non-majors, he has one round over par. Or sorry, eight rounds. So he's played two non-majors, one round over par. And then six of those eight rounds are in the 60s.
Yeah. Yeah, the round over par was third round at Travelers. He shot a 75. He made five bogeys and two doubles. But he makes so many birdies, man. Like, he just scores and scores and scores and scores. I mean, it's really impressive. I'm stock up on him for sure. I think the only guy I'm going to go stock down on is this next guy, Justin Suh. USC, he had a tough Travelers. Didn't play well. Yeah. Missed the cut. This was, what, his second event, third event?
Second as a pro. He also missed the cut at Memorial. And then earlier this year, he played Bay Hill, the Arm Hammer Invitational presented by MasterCard, and missed the cut. So he is 0 for 3. I do think that he is the fourth. I mean, out of this group, he's definitely the fourth player. I think, you know, Hovland and Wolf are probably T1. And then... Suh is probably Morikawa is probably closer behind them. I do think Suh, though, is, you know, in their shadow.
Yeah, he only made one birdie over the first two rounds, and this is a course that, you know,
can't do that.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, Patrick, I saw Patrick Cantlay said, like, I feel like I can birdie every hole, which is a very tour saw statement, but also kind of true. So, okay, we're going to get to one more thing, stat of the day, after...
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
It's a really fine line creating workout clothes that are great in the gym and workout clothes that are also great to look at outside the gym. And Vuori has threaded that needle. They are designed to work out in, but they don't look like it. They don't feel like it. And it's incredibly comfortable stuff, whether you are running, training, swimming, doing yoga, running errands, lounging around the house. It really doesn't matter. These are versatile clothes. You'll find me often in the men's Sunday performance jogger because I like the jogger situation that goes on down at the bottom, but they're very comfortable. They've got a little bit of a shorter inseam, so they're not as bulky as other pants or other joggers that I have seen out there, and I've really enjoyed how they work both in and out of the gym. So now, here's what you can do for our listeners. First-time purchasers are getting 20% off. All you have to do is go to Vuori.com/first. That's Vuori.com/first. Again, not only will you receive 20% off your first order, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75. And here's my favorite part, free returns. Yeah, go check it out, Vuori.com/first, and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.
The break. Okay, Sean, last thing I got for you today. We don't have time to get into everything. Maybe we'll run this back on Wednesday or something. The last thing I have for you, this is really interesting. Jeff Shackelford had this on jeffshackelford.com, and he talked about how he was talking about average age of winners this year. And obviously we talked about Chez being 37 earlier. Gary Woodland won the U.S. Open at 35. He said, so I'm reading this off his site. Since the start of 2019, there have been 9 winners in their 20s. 2 won events opposite to more, so opposite field events. One was Rory, who's now 30, and another was Koepka, who's 29. Xander is the youngest winner at 25. That was back in January. And the average age of 2018-19 PGA Tour winners is 33 years old. Well, the top 20 in the FedEx Cup points average is 32.6 years old. So that's, to me, that's stat of the day. That is really interesting, and I'm intrigued to hear just kind of your thoughts on some of those numbers.
Yeah, I think it definitely, you know, bucks the trend of where we thought golf was headed after 2015 through 17, just because of the emergence of Spieth, Thomas, and Xander. And I'm probably missing a couple, but I do, there's still a certain amount of, there's still a certain benefit to maturity in golf, as great as it is to hit it far. And also, though, I think, too, technology and everything we're learning, like, yeah, it's going to develop good players younger, but I think it's also going to extend careers. So, like, Gary Woodland, you know, before, you know, once you hit 40, maybe you were in a decline period, whereas, you know, Gary Woodland's 36, he's entering the best years of his career. Chez Reavie's entering the best play of his career. And so I do think that with further knowledge about fitness and nutrition to keep guys healthier longer, further, you know, technology and being optimized technology for distance, being able to hit it longer or hit it farther longer, I do think that you'll see guys who are still able to compete physically with the young guys, and then they'll also have the maturity added in with it. So it makes sense to me, I think, because, you know, we thought that all this technology and stuff is only going to benefit guys on the front end and get them peaking early, but really it also it helps guys on the back end as well.
Yeah, I think the other thing is, like, so if you look at this in three stages, you've got kind of the young 20s where guys are just coming out. This is like the Hovland Wolf group where you're just like, all you do is play golf, right? And so you've got that stage. And then you've got like this weird late 20s stage that I think Rory just exited, to where you're like, you have, if you have a ton of success early on, like, you don't really know who you are in your late 20s. Like, you're trying to like figure a bunch of stuff out. And then into your 30s and beyond, you kind of have figured out who you are and what you want to do and who you want to be. And so if you don't, I think if you don't have guys that are in the 20, 21, 22, 23 range winning a lot, your average age is going to balloon, because I feel like it's, this might sound dumb, but I feel like it's easier to win when you're in your 30s and beyond, just because you're more settled than in your late 20s. Late 20s is, a weird age, like, for a lot of these guys. And maybe I'm looking at specific careers like Spieth and Rory and JT and some of those guys, but I just think it's easier when you're older or really young than it is kind of when you're in that middle ground.
Yeah, I think that I agree with that. I think it's easy to come out and maybe kind of be naive when you first come out. You know, if you always had, if you succeeded all of your life at every level, and then you just kind of think, especially when you've seen your peers do it too, that's easy to think, okay, I'm just going to come out and win again. And you kind of do, but you know, you kind of get some of that scar tissue and maybe need to rebound from it. You know, if you come out and have success right away, you're like, oh, this is easy. And then you just think you can do it forever. But then you blow that first lead, or you go through that first rough patch, and you have to kind of recover from it. So I definitely could see some of that. It is interesting how we've seen guys have a lot of success at 25 and a lot of success at like 35, but maybe, I don't want to say lose their way, but yeah, have some kind of middling years there in the middle.
Middling years in the middle. Okay, that's all I got. You got anything else from Travelers or anything else you're working on or thinking about?
No, I think we covered probably more than people wanted us to.
Yeah, we got Zach Sutra in there. We got Chez, deep dive on Chez. We got your boy Chip. We didn't even talk about Keegan Bradley. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, it is pretty crazy that, I mean, Travelers has an amazing field, really, really good field. They've done a lot of work to get such a good field. And you still, just because of the depth of golf, and then especially on a course where different styles can succeed, but you still don't end up with a week where, you know, the stories of the week aren't necessarily Brooks and Jordan, but are Chip McDaniel and Zach Sutcher and Victor Hovland. So it's cool that even on a star-studded week like that, like, you get this mixed bag of storylines.
Yep, for sure. Okay, that's all I got. And Sean, we will talk again soon.
Sounds good.
See ya.
See ya.